Not long ago, I heard a seasoned Sunday school teacher talking about a time when she was teaching the Good Friday story to her young class of students. I can't remember exactly how young she said they were, but they must have been pretty young because some of them had never really heard the story before. And now the woman sounded like she knew what she was doing as a Sunday school teacher, and I'm sure that the curriculum cautioned to depict the events of this night in age-appropriate language, but still, when telling of how the mean men made fun of Jesus and hit Jesus and eventually hurt Jesus bad enough so that he died. A little girl, we'll call her Sally, because that's what girls in stories like this are called. When the teacher told the class that they hurt Jesus bad enough so that he died, little Sally began crying and erupted, "No, not Jesus. Why would anyone do those things to Jesus?" It's a good question. It's the right question to ask on Good Friday. Why would anyone do those things to a good shepherd who goes in search of his little lambs, or to a nice man who eats with lonely little Zacchaeus? Why do those things to the warm Jesus who adores and welcomes little Sally's? Teacher of all people, why would anyone do those things to Jesus? What would you have said to little Sally? The Sunday school teacher I was listening to didn't say what she said. Maybe you'd scurry off to snacks or something. But what would you say to, why would anyone ever do something like that to Jesus? How about because not all is well with the world? Because only in a world that is not well did those things happen to Jesus. Not that we're always very good at noticing or admitting or really seeing that all is not well, especially our own part in it. Like a woman I know who speaks constantly in the presence of her perennially angry husband, lest he say something off-putting, we distract ourselves from the not well. Or we cover it up as quickly as possible. If you watch the Super Bowl halftime show this year, you know the superstar singer Alicia Keys' voice cracked at the beginning of one of her songs. But you only know that if you watched it and listened live, because very soon after, the NFL had their sound people cover the crack. Fix the crack would be because we don't like listening to cracked voices any more than we like admitting cracked lives. Or maybe more than anything, we just keep busy and carry on, ignore all that is not well. The winner of the top prize at the Cannes Film Festival last year, the Grand Prix winner, was a movie called Zone of Interest. It was also nominated for 5 Academy Awards. It won for Best Foreign Film and Best Sound. The movie centers around the near idyllic life of Rudolph and Hedwig Haas, in their beautiful family, in their beautiful house with its beautiful gardens. It's full of birthday parties and brunches and business meetings. A man caring for his beloved horse, a playful dog, brothers playing silly tricks on each other, a teenage daughter sneaking kisses with a boy. That's what you see in the movie, and pretty much all you see. But that's not what you hear. At least not all that you hear. What you hear, always in the background, but what you hear nonetheless, if you're listening, are muffled gunshots and the constant coming and going of trains and soldiers shouting and furnaces firing and the cries of human pain. And the reason you hear that is because it's 1943. And Rudolf Haas is the commandant of the Auschwitz concentration camp. And because the goings on in his beautiful home are separated from the horrors going on in that camp only by an 8-foot-tall garden wall, high enough so that you can't see, but only hear, and then only if you haven't become so accustomed to it that you drown it out. The wall is high enough so that you can't see, but can only hear, and then just barely the horror the very not well going on the other side. Zone of Interest got a 6-minute standing ovation at its first showing. And I can't wonder if that had something to do with perhaps the visceral reaction in those who were viewing, who stood, maybe they couldn't help themselves, stood because they recognized that they had come face to face with a truth, a hard truth, but were somehow forced by watching to realize that ours is a world so very not well, full of people so very not well, who most often just ignore it. Not tonight. Tonight is a time in the church, maybe more than any other time, when the wall comes down. And the sounds of what we'd usually like to ignore get turned up. The sounds of women mourning and criminals reviling and rulers scoffing and dice clattering, the sounds of pilots' pitiful silence and soldiers mocking and nails cutting and a spear plunging into the side, plunging into the heart, the one heart that truly never pumped anything but love. You are right, Sally. It should not be. Then why was it? Because of me. Was it for crimes that I had done? He groaned upon the tree. And for our crimes, not just in some abstract way that there's some scale in a far-off heaven with bad deeds and Jesus is a really big good deed that cancels them out. No, that's too far. No, for your crimes and mine in a way much closer to home. I was not there 2,000 years ago. But in Pilate's turning a blind eye to injustice, my obliviousness to the horrors around me was. You were not there when the sun turned black. But in those soldiers click-clacking the dice, your dark self-centeredness was. You were not there at the foot of the cross, but in the "you fools" of the passers-by and in the "kill'ems" of the rulers and in the "come on, mans" of his fellow crucifieds, our angers and our envies and our rivalrous inability to see that everybody around us is suffering too, all of that was there. Tonight we hear it and own it. And let Jesus have it. In that movie, there's really only one beautiful thing. In the midst of all the horrifyingly fake beauty of Zone of Interest, there's one little girl. Just like Rudolf Haas was a real person, this girl was a real person. Her name is Alexandra B. Strone. She died in 2016, a young Polish girl at the time. She was very real, and so was her beauty. She's shown at several points in the movie, riding her bike through the Zone of Interest in the dead of night, risking everything, her life and the lives of her families, in order to hide apples in the wheelbarrows that the starving camp prisoners will discover when forced back to work at break of day. All is not well in her world. And yet Alexandra, in her love, works to set things right. One clunk, clunk of an apple in a wheelbarrow at a time. And so Jesus, in the midst of those sins, in the midst of all those sounds that we too often try to ignore, cover, distract ourselves. Jesus, in the midst of all that, well, first he says, turn it up. Pound louder, scream more, do your worst. And then in a voice that rushes like many waters, full-throated, and louder than your loudest sins, more booming even than his primordial let there be, he cries, Father, forgive them. The most beautiful sound, Father, forgive them. Father, give them to me. The sound that will only grow louder until you and I finally believe it and trust it. Father, forgive them. You are so loved, no matter how loud your sins. You are this loved. And then the last sound from the cross. And he bowed his head, gave up his spirit, and breathed his last. The wind, the breath, the Spirit of God exhaled from Jesus and into the world and into you. The Spirit of the new creation, the sound of a love that is stronger than death from Jesus' lungs, the breath of life that never ever dies. I understand your tears, Sally. What can we say to that sad little girl? Take heart, Sally. The next lesson in the Sunday school curriculum is really, really good.